KPCW News Time now, 8:10. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Summit County Council meeting and work session starting 2:30 tomorrow at the County Courthouse in Colville. In the studio with a preview of the agenda, I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
Some council members may be going to the open house at regarding the Kimball Junction Master Plan happening at Park City Coffee Roaster tomorrow between 8 and noon. So what's happening there?
Well, it's just an opportunity to have the planners available to talk to the public. You know, early on, one of the suggestions from, or some of the suggestions from some of the public was that we get a lot more public outreach out about the Kimball Junction Neighborhood Plan draft. And so this is our first step in that. We're going to have three open houses over the next 3 weeks. This is going to be the longest one. I believe also our planners will have some availability at the Smith's Grocery Store over the next few weeks if they haven't been there already. So we're really trying to make ourselves available to answer questions that people have about the draft plan.
Okay. Does the plan eventually come back to the council for
final
approval?
Oh, yeah. So it will be seen on both the 29th and the June 5th. They're scheduled on our long-term agenda for that. Both possibilities that the council would consider it for adoption at that point.
Yeah. Anything that you've heard at this point that might need some tweaking?
I'm not sure. You know, I'll let the council deal with that as far as what they want to tweak. But, you know, some of the criticism has been around specifics in the plan on whether, you know, projections of residents or density are correct, or just some more, wanting more specifics about height of buildings projected in the plan. Some things that perhaps are not a little too specific for a general plan type item that would more be taken care of in code revisions that are done, or specific development agreements as they come forward.
All right. Also, the council will get an update on the management of both the Rockport and Echo State Parks in terms of just how reservoirs look at this point, runoff looking good?
You know, the reservoirs are not managed by the state parks, so it'll be a little different discussion than that. I think the reservoirs will look good towards the end of the runoff season. Of course, our water managers are managing that process. But really, this is about mostly about some of the construction that's going on around the Echo State Park. They're doing some improvements to the campgrounds there. We've already seen them scrape ground on that and see what the future plans are for the Rockport State Park.
Okay, this is the second summer with Echo as a state park. About a year ago, we were talking about traffic congestion, rowdy behavior by visitors. Have those issues pretty much been resolved?
You know, probably the sheriff's office is the best one to answer that question. I didn't hear as much from last year. I think there's a lot of anticipation about these improvements that are going to be made over the next few years. I believe somewhere around $6 million worth of improvements that are going into the facilities there. That should change the character of how camping happens there.
Okay. And in terms of the rail trail, does that tie right into the state park?
It goes right by it, through it, and then ends at kind of the confluence of 80 and 84 as they come together. It's part of the state park system, the rail trail. So it connects down into Park City and connects up to the Echo State Park.
Okay. Let's see, a resolution that would start the process of putting a property tax on the ballot for North Summit Recreation District patrons. This is exclusively for youth recreation?
It is exclusively for youth recreation. That is the mission of the North Summit Recreation District. They haven't, at this point, they have had some small forays into adult recreation, mostly in the education realm, some firearm training and things like that. But it is concentrating on youth recreation, and that's what they concentrate their business on. This is a result of, the North Summit Recreation District has been around for a long time. They've had fits and starts at different attempts at building infrastructure. and getting bond issues for that have been unsuccessful. But the long-term goal of the recreation district would that it would be a self-supporting district similar to the Snyderville Basin Recreation District. So this is another attempt at making them independent.
Well, part of that was that the county council cut the budget by what, 10 grand?
Yeah, so traditionally they'd been, you know, kind of since the inception had been getting $35,000. Each of the recreation districts were getting $35,000 a year from the general fund. 2 years ago, the Snyderville Basin Recreation District did not receive that $35,000, and that has continued. Both the South Summit area and the North Summit Recreation District were reduced by $10,000 in the 2019 budget to $25,000. And the message to those recreation districts is that it's time to start bringing those funding mechanisms more local and more under local control so that they can determine their own destiny.
Okay, so should they expect another cut then this coming budget year?
I think that was the message. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to predict what's going to be in the budget for 2020 yet since we haven't started that process. But I think this group is certainly planning for that. They've been in front of you to talk about that in the past, and they are certainly working strongly with their constituency to make sure that their folks understand how they operate, what their budgets are, where their money goes, and why they're asking for what they're asking.
Okay, what they're asking for is this tax rate of, it's pretty minute, but it would raise about $85,000 a year.
So. Yeah, it raises about $85,000 a year and equals about $28 of tax per household based on average. I think the average in the staff report was about $276,000, and that's a taxable value for those properties.
Okay. So it's really kind of do or die, though, for these guys. I mean, if people are serious about youth recreation, this is what they've got to step up.
Well, you know, what they've had to do this year with that reduction in funding from the county, they have had to raise fees this year in order to keep their services going. That would be the continuing trend, I would imagine, at least what I've heard from the North Summit Recreation Board, is if funding continues to go down, or that the local constituency doesn't support that mill levy, that fees will continue to go up in order to provide those services.
So what's the county doing then with the additional $100,000?
Well, you know, it isn't $100,000 yet because it hasn't gone down that much. There's pressures on all parts of our budget every year. As you know, property tax doesn't go up except for new growth. Whether it's landfills or the health department or other things that compete within the general fund, those are the things that those dollars go towards.
There's also a resolution for the Indian Hollow Creek development. This would dissolve a wastewater district that was set up about 10 years ago. How come we're doing this?
So a procedural step. I mean, one of the parts of their development agreement was that if and when there was a wider water reclamation district or sewer district available, the Indian Hollow development would dissolve into that. And become part of that so that their package system that's set up for that specific development would be managed by the bigger system and eventually hook into the bigger infrastructure. We have an Eastern Summit County sewer district that's been formed. We're working on the basics of what that will include as far as fees and staff in order to run that. It has been a board of staff up until this point that has been there to administratively process applications that come through that sewer district. It does not have sewer associated with it, so it will manage larger collected systems first, and then will eventually, as infrastructure develops in the east part of the county, will help manage that.
So when we talk about the east side of the county, are we talking both North and South Summit?
Yes, it does cover that. Mm-hmm. So the only exception to that is you recall a few years ago we helped facilitate a package system up in Echo in order to make sure that those folks were on collected a collected package sewer system. And that did not become part of that district. It still could in the future. But it was a decision at the time of the council not to include that.
Yeah. There is a treatment plan. Is that just for Colville then?
That is just for Colville. That is correct.
Okay. So we haven't built a treatment plant then for the east side?
No, there is no east side treatment plant at this point. Each of the municipalities have their own, but there's nothing in the unincorporated county at this point.
All right. Let's see, the council will also review and possibly establish a study area for a village overlay zone for Hoytsville and set up a study committee. This is being requested by 27 property owners with a combined 1,100 acres. Some of them have let us know that they are not the same group who wanted to set up the Hoytsville town. But what does this overlay zone accomplish here?
So it accomplishes a few things, but mostly it's about better planning. So, you know, if there's an area of the county that wants to develop like this 1,100 acres, you know, we can talk about the infrastructure piece like sewer, like water. When it comes to these larger types of developments, we can talk about the housing opportunities available than that commercial that would then help support some of that from a tax base perspective. It allows a mechanism within our code that was new in the last update of the East Summit County Code that allows that planning to happen between the Planning Commission and a committee of landowners plus some planning commissioners in order to more thoughtfully plan out those larger rezones.
Okay, so what happens from here?
So from here, the county council has to agree to the boundary of the village overlay and set up the official committee to study this. And right now, that would be made up of a representative of the landowners and the planning commission. And it could include infrastructure providers as the process goes on. They would then study the village overlay and what the landowners are wanting to do, make recommendations to the Planning Commission, who would then process that.
So why this additional step? Why doesn't it just go to the Planning Commission?
Well, because it involves several landowners. I mean, it's talking about an amalgamation of land as opposed to one specific landowner or one specific lot. You know, if you think about it, some of the criticism that we've gotten on the development of Kimball Junction is that it's a little piecemeal. And so this allows for that to almost in a master plan development way to look at a bigger piece of land in a more thoughtful way with all the inputs and outputs in order to see if something can be done.
All right. Later on, a request for a special exception for Blue Sky Ranch. They're asking for a bypass road?
Yeah, so up around the area of their hotel and the distillery, in order to facilitate deliveries more and some of the logistics traffic that they have, they're asking for a special exception, mostly to grade grade requirements within our code or our engineering standards in order to build this bypass road.
So this has also gone to Planning Commission?
It has not gone to Planning Commission. It's not eligible to go to Board of Adjustments, I believe, because it doesn't fall within the right chapter of the code to go to Board of Adjustments. It does not a height exception or a setback exception, which is the only thing that can go to Board of Adjustments. So the only mechanism that they have within the code in order to get this grade exception is a special exception.
Okay, and I guess the biggest concern is just the scarring or?
Yeah, I mean, it could cause some scarring, according to the staff report, and as well the grades themselves. You know, the grade standards are made for a reason, mostly from a plowing and ice snow perspective. And, you know, I imagine they'll have some discussion about how that would work.
Especially when you're talking about delivery trucks.
That's correct.
Yeah. And finally, a proclamation saluting Dr. John Hanrahan, a community activist, one of the members of the first Summit County Council. This is what for? Just
well, I think it's just to recognize a colleague in one way, as well as a citizen that has just done so much for the community. Also, just recently retired from the People's Health Clinic. You know, as a founding member of the Hope Alliance, and so many other things. It's I can't even remember them all from the proclamation that Dr. Hanrahan has been involved in. And it's just an opportunity to recognize someone that's given so much to the county, and it's just a great guy.
Yeah. Anything else you want to mention?
That's all I have today.
All right, Tom. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:30 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Planning Commission will hear three items related to the Woodside Park Phase 2 housing development at their meeting tomorrow night. In the studio to preview, I have Planning Director Bruce Erickson along with Planner Hannah Tyler. Good morning.
Good morning,
Leslie.
Good morning.
So first, the city held an open house last night specifically to take input on this Woodside Park Phase 2. Neither of you were there?
No, neither one of the regulatory folks were there. This one was completely done by the applicant, which is the city. So we kind of have to do our job separately from being an applicant. But I think it's important, and I think the good information for the public is this is a fairly coordinated approach in that Woodside 1 and Woodside 2 and pedestrian access through the library all the way to Park Avenue are coordinated in a single master plan development. So, I the message out there to development teams other than the city is you might want to watch how the city does these things and puts housing into locations and redevelops brownfields. Well, Hannah can give you additional information.
Yeah, there's certainly been concern around a few aspects of this project, the density, the setbacks, parking, open space. And some of it, I think, stems from the idea that because the city is the applicant, it's skirting the rules in the land management code. So can you talk about some of those, how the city has worked within the land management code to...
Yeah,
is any other applicant?
I'll let Hannah give you the details on that. But for the most part, the direction from the city council and the community development director is you will meet the code. We don't get any special exceptions. You don't get any special deals. There's no backroom handshakes. This development is consistent with the land management code. And you know, for the purposes of the public, the way this system works, whether you're a private developer or you're the city, is that the conditional use process is designed to set a set of criteria for a project. The way you modify those criteria is through the MPD process, and you need to be bringing public benefits forward so that you get the opportunities to modify. So there's no additional height in this particular project. The Planning Commission can make the determination on the setbacks just like they would for a private sector developer. The parking is consistent with the land management code. There's no exceptions being requested. The site plan is consistent with the land management code. So a lot of this is kind of noise and not necessarily real effective code analysis, and Hannah can provide additional information on that.
Yeah, I think he really hit it there in that we are fully confident that this is meeting the land management code. The master plan development process does give the Planning Commission some flexibility on giving some, like, reduced setbacks to the zone setback, for example, but that's completely within their purview to do it. And like Bruce said, that's something that any developer could ask for, whether or not they're the city or a private entity. And so staff's confident that we're pushing forward a compliant project that's hopefully going to get some community benefit out of it.
Yeah. We have heard that this phase two is actually less dense than what could go there. Does the Planning Commission, though, need to consider what's happening right above it at the base of Park City Mountain?
At this time, it's my understanding that we don't have an application for the base area. And so we have to process every application that's in front of us. And whether or not this was a private developer or the public entity owning this property is we're going to treat them equally. And so, like you said, this is below density. And so this is well within what they're allowed to do.
So just to follow on, because the planning director has sort of a different perspective than his chief of planning. we do consider what's going to happen across the street. It's been there since 1997. I think the issues with respect to pedestrian circulation and sidewalks and where the crosswalk goes that was requested by the Planning Commission the last time are certainly issues to make sure that we cover off on. And if we do a crosswalk and sidewalks and continue the circulation from Park Avenue all the way up to the resort, whatever developer wants to work on the main lot at the resort is going to have to respect that. Whether we move bus pickup locations, bus stops because of the affordable housing on Empire Avenue, those are longer-term considerations. But, yeah, we're paying attention, and I think the Planning Commission is absolutely right in requesting that information.
So have Commissioner Susser's concerns been resolved in terms of that pedestrian crossing? Do we know where it's going to happen? And
yes, so we've worked with both the Transportation Planning Department as well as the Engineering Department, because that is within the right-of-way. And so it's hard sometimes for people to understand that this is a city project, but part of this discussion sits within the right-of-way. And so we've discussed with them possibly something for the future. This pedestrian link from City Park to the base of the resort is part of the general plan. And so part of what Bruce, just to kind of go off of what Bruce said, is as the base area does develop, is we'll make sure that is consistent with what we recommend in the general plan for that pedestrian access. And so we are working with both those departments to make sure that whatever we put there will integrate into that future plan.
So tomorrow, the Planning Commission looking at a plat amendment, the master plan development application, and a conditional use permit. So this is going through a master plan development instead of an affordable housing master plan development? How come?
Well, here's why, Leslie. The affordable housing clause in the master plan development is an option for a developer to take advantage of certain reduced restrictions on the property. For example, reduced open space and increased density in the zone. In this case, the city has chosen not to take that option and just do it like any other developer would do it. Anyway, that's the situation, is that it's an option, not an obligation to do it, because affordable housing in the master plan development requires 100% affordable housing units, and we are delivering 5 4 market rate units in order to pay for this. So I think, depending on your political leanings, this is a fairly businesslike decision that said we're going to provide some 4 market housing close to the resort in order to pay for some of our affordable housing obligations.
So you're actually obligated to use the MPD as opposed
We need to use the MPD because of the density. We're not obligated to use the affordable housing clause of the MPD.
Well, I understand that because you've got the for sale market.
Right.
House.
And,
yeah.
And so,
so you didn't have a choice.
And the MPD, you know, the master plan development allows flexibility for the Planning Commission to make a better project. That's all it does. But the conditional use standards under which an MPD is approved for don't change. So it doesn't matter whether you're Bob and Madge doing a conditional use on Main Street or in Park Meadows, the standards for your approval remain the same as what the city has to live up to on this site.
Planning Commission also considering an amendment to the King's Crown MPD and CUPs. What's the applicant looking for here?
The applicant has modified the project a little bit. They're going to add one additional affordable unit and reduce some of the square footage. They want to use some underground space as additional amenity space for the owners. So there'll be a room for a pool table and some bike storage and some of the other things. The MPD was very, very specific and didn't give us a lot of room to manipulate. And so in this particular case, we're having them go back to the Planning Commission and have the Planning Commission re-review it. But no substantial changes to the outside. The public won't see any of these changes. These are just underground and moving some walls inside the units.
Is there a staff recommendation on this?
Staff recommendation is for approval.
Okay. Planning Commission will also consider continuing the public hearing for the Twisted Branch final subdivision plat. Again, what's the holdup here?
The holdup here is this is very, very complicated because it has everything to do with the original Empire Pass Flagstaff annexation. It has everything to do with whether or not we provide access over the top to the Bonanza Flats area and the Brighton Estates subdivision. Twisted Branch Road is a private road, and it was designed specifically to be a private road. There is a clause in the development agreement that should Guardsman Road be taken out of the public realm, then Twisted Branch would have to be offered for public dedication. The city doesn't have to accept that dedication, but it would have to be offered for dedication. There is a clause in the development agreement that allows for a new restaurant on the side of the Ruby Ski Run. The Twisted Branch Road subdivision accommodates that. But it's very complicated, and there's a lot of moving parts in the background, not just a road. So it continues while we work through the details, and the city attorney's office is heavily involved in trying to help us with this one.
So is there a deadline on this?
There's no deadline. We've rescheduled it for the city council action towards the end of June. We'd like to get this accomplished, but there's some underlying factors that are not the least of which is the foreclosure action by Wells Fargo on Talisker. The transfer of the ownership of the road from the current owner to the Empire Pass Owners Association. So all those things are kind of in the background. It's kind of a moving target, and it's very, very difficult for Planner Whetstone to actually write a staff report when things keep changing.
You're actually losing her, aren't you?
She has been stolen from us by Summit County. She will take over in Summit County on the 4th of June. We're very proud of her. I congratulate Pat Putt and Peter Barnes for their initiative in this one, and she'll be missed. We have two new planners coming on staff 1st of June, one of which, Rebecca Ward, actually has a JD or a Juris Doctor degree. We also have a new operations manager coming on board, Jessica... I'm sorry, I had a couple other things on my mind at this point. But we have a new operations manager coming on board 1st of June. We're looking to fill Kirsten's position by the 15th of June.
Okay. Finally, Kimball's the Special Events Center. Did you finally issue a CUP on that?
I have not. We're continuing to review the information we heard during the public hearing last week and make sure that we're consistent with the Land Management Code and the CUP criteria. At this point, we're down to kind of a discussion about what amplified music is, which is kind of an interesting conversation. The original noise management plan that the Planning Commission would have heard would have allowed electronically provided acoustic music, but not amplified. And so it's
splitting hairs there, but
yeah, no, I agree. And you're the radio person and I'm not. But you know, we're trying to work through those details and make sure the neighborhood is taken care of.
Okay. Bruce, Hannah, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW News. Time now, 8:43. Good morning. Well, joining me now in the studio from Recycle Utah, I'm Haley Lebsack from the Director of Communications and Development, Mary Closser, Director of Education. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with you, Mary, and Recycle Utah's Green Business Program, a meeting recently about how to get more businesses engaged. We'll be following up with Celia Peterson from the city on that. But let's just talk a little bit about the origin of the program.
Okay, the Green Business Program started over 3 years ago when I went full-time and Recycle Utah decided we wanted to do more with businesses. So our goal the first year back in 2016 was to get 25 businesses by the end of the year, and we succeeded, and now we're at 80 businesses in the program.
Okay, and what is the do the program? I mean, what's it for?
Well, the goal is basically to get businesses to think more sustainably, just to get them to even think that way, always be thinking about what more they can do. And to be in the program, they need to establish three goals on their own with my assistance. I have a lot of ideas, coming from other businesses and just from my experience. And the goals can pertain to anything under the sustainability umbrella, pertaining to waste, energy, water, communication, transportation, food, etc.
Okay, so you name the business then as a green business if they follow these rules?
Well, they have to set three goals, they have to complete an application, and they have to follow four rules. And the four rules are they must recycle at least three items at their workplace, no styrofoam products allowed, have an energy or water saving program in place, and they need to be responsive and communicative with Recycle Utah.
So are all 80 of these businesses doing that?
Well, we try. You know, it's I'm the only one running it. So, you know, I do my best to keep up. It's kind of a, faith-based program, too, where, you know, we trust that they're doing it. What happens is I think a lot of businesses want to be more green, but they just don't make the time to do it as a priority. So this provides them some accountability. I'm checking in with them every, probably 4 or 5 months saying, hey, how are your goals coming along? And if they're not succeeding with a goal in 1 year, then I let them carry it over into the next year, but they still have to continue to create new goals all the time. And I do check in. Five businesses have already been dropped.
Because
they simply were not doing their goals at all.
Ah.
They were not working on them.
Okay. And when they were marketing themselves as green businesses?
No, they weren't. You know, we certainly, they don't get the perks from us to be a green business anymore. Because okay. We do have some perks in the program.
Okay, and we'll talk a little bit about the perks.
Basically, their name goes on a list on our website and also in the park record. They get a decal. They get to be part of the Green Drinks program. They get our Green Business newsletter, which goes out every other month. They get social media hits. And I think that what businesses like the most about the program is the networking. They love knowing what other businesses are doing to get ideas for themselves.
And you've had some real rock stars in this program.
Yeah, there's some big ones. You know, we have the two resorts, and we have a lot of restaurants and Cole Sports and Jan's and Montage recently joined, and Hyatt Centric, New Park. We have quite a few hotels, but there are a lot of areas I'm still hoping to pursue, and I get interns to help me with that, too.
Yeah, and when you think about 80 businesses out of how many? I mean, what are we looking at? I mean, this is...
Well, you know, the focus now is more on quality than quantity. Really want to fine-tune it and make sure that our current businesses are working on their goals and, you know, try to get, you know, maybe 10 additional businesses a year.
Mm-hmm. And are you focused up mostly on the largest businesses? Because that's really where you're going to see the most impact. Yeah?
Exactly. By no means. We have businesses of all sizes. We have one-person businesses, too. And they are working on things in their own home because they might work out of their home. So it's just getting people to think that way.
Okay. If people are interested in joining the program, what do they need to do?
They can contact me, mary@recycleutah.org, or they can contact Recycle Utah and ask for my contact information, or they can go onto our website, recycleutah.org.
Okay. And Haley, you got a number of events coming up. You want to kick off with some of those?
Always. We are right in the middle of our Mark Miller Do Good, Feel Good. Recycle Utah is Subaru Loves Earth partner for Mark Miller. So during the month of May, if you purchase a new or used car from one of the Mark Miller Subaru locations, you can choose to donate $75 to one of their 6 nonprofits, and we're really proud to be one of them. And to celebrate on June 15th, which is a Saturday, they're doing a party with food, drinks, live music, a chance to win a Subaru, can't remember what kind of car. And I believe that's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., we'll be out there all day, so come down and see us if you're in the valley. And the dates that I know everybody is listening for are Dumpster Days, May 30th through June 1st, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Those are our big popular questions we're getting right now. We'll have 2 dumpsters, 1 for large household waste, 1 for yard waste. No business waste, no hazardous materials, no fridges, no mattresses. You must be able to lift the items into the bin. I can't guarantee that a volunteer is going to be any bigger than me, and I'm only 5'4". So you've got to be able to pick that up yourself. And then our next big fun party is Uncorked.
Well, let me go back to the dumpster days, though. I mean, what we're seeing around in some communities are kind of these fix-it clinics where instead of throwing it away, that there's actually people, you know, like vacuum cleaners, right?
Correct.
Vacuum cleaners are fixable, except that, you know, may as well spend the $150 and buy a new vacuum rather than fix your old one. Are you guys talking about anything like that?
We've tried to host a few fix-it clinics before with seamstress and bike mechanics and electronic fixers. They tend to have not been very popular in our community. There are a few in Salt Lake that we will direct people to that are a little bigger. They have more of the resources than we have at our center. One of the reasons we do the dumpster days at the center, though, is because we can get into conversation with people when they drop things off about other locations that maybe they could take them. We've had people bring us perfectly good, wonderful, like, dining tables, and they can take them to our warehouse or somewhere like the Christian Center. Or they've brought us metal filing cabinets that if they're dented or ruined can still get recycled. So that's, we do try and divert as much as we can from the from what people bring us that day.
Okay. All right. And then you've got coming up in June, the Uncorked party.
Yes. One of my favorite parties. It's our party in the parking lot. We have live music, food trucks, drinks. Tickets are just $7, so it's kind of anyone can join us. This year, we'll also be doing a free electronic waste collection. E-waste is one of the only things we have to charge for at the center because it is so expensive, and Dell just signed on. Any e-waste you bring us that day, they will recycle for free.
Okay. Who's the band?
The band is Cactus Cola and... Lydia just booked them. We'll have another band that's just getting booked, and I'm sorry. I can't remember the name.
Okay.
Yeah, but Cactus Cola is the...
Tickets at the door, then?
Tickets at the door. We don't pre-sell tickets for this one. Comrades will be there with their wraps. Praise Jesus is going to be there. And then Top Shelf will be doing drinks and beer.
Okay. And then finally, just, save the date, August 10th?
Save the date, August 10th, 100 Mile Meal. We did put tickets on sale, and we're already, as of this morning, over halfway sold out. So go to recycleutah.org to purchase tickets. They're $200 for a single ticket, $1,500 for a table of eight.
Okay, Haley and Mary, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank
Leslie.
You.
KPCW News Time now, 8:52. It's the local news hour on KPCW. 8:53, good morning. Well, the theatrical production of the greatest musical of all time opens at the Egyptian Theater Friday night. On the phone, I have the show's director, Josh Robinson. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what theater group are you with, Josh?
We're with the Ziegfeld Theater here in Ogden.
Oh, okay, sure. So talk to us a little bit. I mean, do your actors have the moves like Astaire and Rogers?
Well, with the movie, with Gene Kelly and co, it's been a big journey with some of us having different levels of path experience. But luckily enough, the cast put in the work and the effort, and it really shows on the stage for sure.
All right. Well, most of us know, I think, probably just the title song. So can you tell us a little bit about the story itself?
Well, yeah, of course. Well, the show starts out in the late 1920s when the talkies were still, when silent films were still a big part of American cinema. And then soon after that, though, the talkies came. And we referenced a couple films like The Jazz Singer and some other ones from Warner Brothers. And this other fictional movie company gets a little scared, gets a little hyped up. And so they try to push through a movie really quickly, and it does not go as planned for them. One of the main actresses, you know, with that transition, didn't get all the vocal training that she might have needed to sound really good on film, and so we have to do some creative workarounds to try to figure out what she's going on there. But the show is just like a good classic musical with a bunch of, it has more musical numbers than most shows do, which I find really exciting too, because I can just, there's another one coming right up.
All right. So tell us a little bit about the folks that you've got performing.
Well, Colton Ward is playing Don Lockwood, and he's been really great. That's the Gene Kelly role that people might be more familiar with if they've seen the movie. We have him doing that. He's a really exciting character in general. He's a very fun guy. He does a lot of really good. I'm so sorry. I'm just tripping all over myself. But essentially, I cast him in this role because he was like the boy next door type, and he really made that role shine and had a lot of really great chemistry with our leading lady. And that's being played by Callie Williams, Callie Cluckerhand. And she is really exciting. She's a professional dance teacher, and she does a lot of dancing around the state. And watching her light up the stage is like one of my favorite moments of the show every time. She's very irresistible to watch in every scene that I see her in. But then we've done a little bit of a switcheroo on the casting with the final third part of the trio, the main three, and that's Cosmo Brown. And he's a, well, we've cast her as a girl. So she is a really enigmatic girl that we have here that went through our youth program at our theater. And during the audition process, she just really outshone all the other actors in a bunch of different ways. And when we decided to have her read for Cosmo, it was just a really great fit. And so she's been having a great time just, you know, fooling around with us all. And even though she's a little bit younger, she does have, she keeps up with everybody else and kind of drives some scenes that way, too.
Okay.
So that's been really fun to watch.
Yeah. Well, the play opens Friday. It also plays Saturday at 7:30 and then Sunday at 6. And then again next week, Thursday through Saturday at 7:30, closing Sunday, June 2nd at 6 p.m. Tickets start mm-hmm. at $23. More information, parkcityshows.com. Hey, Josh, thanks for your time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.